Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect.
Thank you for having me, Kathy. So my name's Chris Stenhouse. I run a bookkeeping company called Professional Bookkeeping Service alongside my business partner, Leanne Wilshire. The company's been running since 1983 and was actually founded by my mother. So it's a very much a family values type of business. My background is not actually in bookkeeping or accounting. My background is in technology and IT. I spent 7 years working for Apple. And then prior to that, I was actually studying multimedia systems. So my story is very different or unique, I think, than a traditional bookkeeping or accounting firm. But we love that. So that's us.
I love it when guests introduce themselves. I could have put the kettle on. That was just magnificent. Thank you, Chris.
No worries.
So our paths have crossed to and fro, and you've helped out some of my coaching clients, and you've untangled things, and you've set people up. Who are your favourite clients?
I would actually have to say Allied Health. 100% Allied Health.
We know the reason we're awesome.
Well, yeah, and this isn't biased, I promise, but no, it is Allied Health because what we find is that most Allied Health practitioners are exceptionally time poor, but they are very, very concerned around the attention to detail. So they work well with us because our attention to detail is quite high, and generally we find that they're very, very committed to doing things the right way so that they don't have to think about it ongoing. So that's who we love working with.
Which is good because it means that you know their language and what their work kind of looks like and that you're familiar with some of the practice management software systems as well. So all of the formalities and introductions are out of the way. You're good to go.
Yeah.
So one thing we both know is that every business owner needs a finance team. And I guess in that team is going to be an accountant and the business owner, there may be a coach, and there's got to be a bookkeeper as well. What's the difference nowadays between a bookkeeper and an accountant?
So the lines are definitely getting blurred in that space because and how they're getting blurred is with what's referred to as the advisory services. But traditionally the role of a bookkeeper was in the collection of information. At a fundamental level, bookkeepers collect the information and then they record it appropriately. An accountant actually uses or utilizes that information. So it's almost a handover in that sense. So either the business owner or someone in the business or a bookkeeper for that business is processing and recording all of the transactions and allocating them and recording them to the correct account codes and just basically keeping things organized. And then the accountant will come along and provide some advisory services or advice based on that information. So it's a bit more strategic in that sense. Mm. Also, the area of specialty of a BAS agent or a bookkeeper is specifically in GST, whereas an accountant's specialty is in income tax. They do handle GST as well, but it's kind of like anything. When something's your specialty, generally you'll get a higher quality of service from that option.
So bookkeepers make the accountants look good.
That's how we like to say it.
Yeah. There you go. There's your tagline. Sometimes I hear that business owners are a little kind of nervous about finding a bookkeeper, and there's got to be some pretty quick trust, and there has to be really good communication skills. But oh my gosh, all of a sudden you're opening the kimono and someone's going to see your numbers and your bank account and how whatever it is. What makes a really good bookkeeper?
Well, what makes a really good bookkeeper? So, other than the communication, one of the things that you should be able to expect from your bookkeeping team is that you are advised of your payment obligations for, say, whatever they may be, whether they're for your BAS or other compliance payments. You should know about those payments a month in advance. And what I mean by that is that bookkeepers, if you're using a bookkeeper, an external bookkeeper to do your books, you'll actually get an 8-week extension on the lodgement dates. Now, what some bookkeeping firms do is they'll use that 8-week extension to the last day or the last week and then send you an email or give you a phone call and say, hey, this is what your payment obligation looks like. Now, the time frame that you've got to pay that will be the end of that period. So if you've only been given 4 days, you've got 4 days to effectively come up with the cash. So a really good bookkeeper should be giving you as much lead time as possible and giving you as much information around what those payment obligations look like so that you can plan out your cash flow. So that is a key thing that a good bookkeeper should be doing for you.
So they manage the data and they manage the time frames.
100%.
I haven't 100%. Heard it described like that. That's useful. Mm. How do you know if they're mucking up the information?
How do you know if they're mucking up the information? Honestly, the only real way to do it would be to get an audit or a second set of eyes to give you their opinion. Now, that might come from way of maybe a peer in the industry that you know of who is quite good with their numbers. It might come from another bookkeeping company. An accounting firm could do it. I would recommend a bookkeeper to review the transactions rather than accountants, because bookkeepers are used to going to the level of detail of day-to-day transactions. I guess the short answer is it's very hard to tell if they're mucking up unless you know what you're looking for. And I guess that's actually one of the challenges that we face, because a lot of the time, potential clients that come to us don't understand just how wrong it was in the past, because they don't know what they're looking for, I guess. So I think if I was giving advice around that, I would say either a bi-yearly or even an annual review by an independent party would give you that peace of mind. I think that would be the only way to achieve that.
Mm. Sometimes allied health owners are the money and the numbers and the books aren't their forte. And although they're looking at it and checking, they're not realizing that stuff's in the wrong spot or has been left out or been doubled up. And it can just be this compounding tangle that someone needs to pull apart. And that's almost part of the fear of engaging someone in the first place. Well, how will I even know if they're good, or how will I know if it's getting a little muddled?
Yeah.
So I guess you've got to start, hey?
You do. And I think getting along with them is actually very important. You need to have a good rapport almost instantly, because the amount of communication between the business owner and the bookkeeper is almost going to be on par with the business owner and one of their team members. So being able to communicate is paramount to it.
So although you're based in Melbourne, you've got clients all over the country. Are you using Zoom or email or phone? How do you make all of that bookkeeping love happen?
Yeah, so there are a lot of video conferencing calls that we do. And we check in with clients depending on the client, but it could be anywhere from once a month catch-ups through to quarterly reviews on top of the day-to-day email communication and phone calls.
I guess it's little and often, but then some big check-ins, some more formal stuff as well. And a bookkeeper's usually really patient and kind with teaching some of the businessy numbery concepts to the business owners.
Training techniques aren't necessarily a strong forte. As you know, Kathy, that training, being able to train someone is quite a skill set on its own. But the some bookkeepers are great at it. It's about I guess it's about just having a chat and finding out where those knowledge gaps are, and then setting some key learning objectives around that. So if there are areas of that you know might be a weakness for yourself in terms of your financials, then really targeting that with your bookkeeper and saying, hey, this is something that I want to understand better.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Explain it again and again.
Yeah, and again.
And again.
A different way.
And then a couple more times, and then draw it, then find That's a link it. On YouTube, and eventually it sinks in. Hey, eventually it sinks in.
Yeah.
Okay, good stuff, good stuff. At the moment, you would know from some of your allied health clients, there's and I've got my sort of NDIS kind of thing shouting over my shoulder, is for business owners to better understand their cost of sales, cost of goods, whatever you want to call it. And the cold hard reality of if you sell something for, let's just say $100, what it actually costs you to deliver that. Because we get a bit excited about the price tag, but less aware about what it actually costs to deliver it. Is that something bookkeepers can help with?
Yes. So dissecting your expenses into direct costs and indirect costs, or operating, and whatever we want to term it, actually understanding what the cost to deliver that service or product is to your business is something that a bookkeeper could definitely help you with. And it's really around, just as a rule of thumb, it's really around, is that cost something that is being consumed directly in the delivery of your service? And if it is, then that's how we can start to organize those expenses to paint a better picture.
It can come as a bit of a jolt for business owners to understand that if they're selling something for $100, they might be taking home $23 of it.
And that's correct.
The arms go up in the air. Well, where's all the rest of it? Where is it? Why haven't I got more? And I guess that's that exploration and that pulling it apart and adjusting it and monitoring it. And one of the challenges of business is to take home more than $23 of that 100.
That would be a good start. That would be a good start. The first thing I would say to that is that $100, yes, that's what the sale price was, but no, not all of that $100 is your business's money. You've got all of your team's liability. If you've got team members, you've got liabilities that need to be accounted for. I guess the first step in understanding where the money's going is actually having different bank accounts set aside so that whenever you receive revenue, a certain percentage of that is split out into the bank account, one of the other bank accounts, to take care of your GST liabilities, for example. And you can do that a number of different ways, depending on how complex and how many bank accounts you want, but at least one should be there purely to hold on to the money that's technically not yours.
Yeah. It's kind of mean, that bit, isn't it?
It's mean, but the quicker you get your head around it, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just tough love, I guess.
Yeah. The other way you can make some more profit, if you like, is to put your fees up. What are your thoughts on how often fees should be reviewed and increased?
I think fees should be reviewed once a year and then adjusted accordingly once a year. And when I say adjusted, generally they go up. So the fees, I would definitely put them up in July of the year. And the reason for that is to give you a fresh start for the financial year. So you're comparing apples with apples the whole time. If you do it midway through a financial year, you're basically just muddying the waters as far as what insights you can draw from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, not having those clear metrics right across a financial year makes your budget is going to be a little bit wonky, which is what I wanted to ask you about next.
Yes.
How can bookkeepers help business owners set up a budget? Because that's a scary thing, because that could be a spreadsheet.
Yeah. How do we go about setting up a budget? So The answer to that is you need to start with some figures, some historical figures. And provided you've got something to go on, I mean, the numbers need to be useful. If you don't have historical figures that you believe are correct, then we would actually need to approach it a different way. So it would be similar to a startup business and creating a budget for a startup. So the ways around this would be to actually use a rolling average over financial years. So if you've got, say, 3 years worth of data, and actually have a look at the different sections, so cost of goods sold, and actually have a look at what those averages are as they're going through, so that when you build in your budget, and you're going to be tweaking that budget on a monthly basis when you're reviewing it. Okay, so what you're going to have is say 12 months worth of projections based on the 3 years prior, and then each month you're going to review your actuals to what you've projected and have a look at how you're tracking, and that way you know, well, each time you look at it, if you're tracking above or below the trend.
I used to run a budget, and my only job in preparing for the budget was to count up how many billable days that I had, because my first accountant used to prepare a budget pretty much on a 48-week year, but I work with children and families. And when I looked at it, typically in January, I would have 10 billable days. February might be 15. March, depending on when Easter happened, would be a full month or a partial month, and on and on and on and went. And when I looked at every month right across the year, I would often have 209, 211 billable days, because I'd sometimes bring out the school holidays and things like that as well. And so once we realized with my new accountant this billable days bit, we were able to really hone in the budget so that I knew, well, we figured out what I needed to be earning per day to kind of hit our targets. And we had, you know, January budget built on 10 billable days and February built on 15 or whatever I thought it was going to be. And we got better and better and better at it every single year. We were, more and more aware of what the factors were that impacted on me getting business done.
Yeah, and that is actually a very, very good point. A lot of people don't take that into consideration when they're looking at their budget, because the earning potential is purely based on the days that you can earn. And so that is a very good point that you should take into account.
That's another again in the future, Chris. There you go.
Oh, thank you. another new idea that's kind of coming out at the moment is around a report showing what your direct debit commitments are each month. And the reason for this is that a lot of our expenses now, even our fees, are moving to set monthly fees. And once again, it's on a direct debit. So there's more and more businesses that are moving to that style of invoicing.
That model, yep.
Yeah, that model. And so knowing what your commitment is each month based on those direct debits allows you to then know exactly how much funds you need to have in the bank account.
That's cool, because I've got that on a spreadsheet at the moment, and it's a terrifying amount, truth be told. Is this a plug-in to Xero or something new, or...?
No, not yet. It is a spreadsheet, but it's a good report to have. Very good report to have.
And to also have when your membership things expire and whether they're on automatic rollover. Just saying.
There you go. That's a good point too.
That's been foxy. Yeah, so alrighty, now where will we get to? We're talking about budgets. So
yes.
Is it fair to say they don't have to be super, super complicated, and that getting started with something based on your best possible data is way better than not having one?
Yes. Yeah. So you can almost start to build your budget as you go in the first couple of months, just by keeping an eye on, because as you're imagining that now all of a sudden everyone's aware that the numbers need to be accurate, because apparently no one knew that before, right? So just pretend.
Then
so starting from point zero, as each month goes past, we can use those numbers instead. So you can build the budget very, very quickly based on what's happening, identify the trend, and then make a decision based on that.
Cool. Love it, love it, love it. Something else that I'm asked about pretty often is KPIs, key performance indicators. They nearly always need to have a financial basis to them. There's a whole lot of other KPI type things you can have, more behavioral, or customer service kind of KPIs that you can have. How can bookkeepers help business owners set KPIs?
The KPIs are going to be based on a budget, because obviously it's a certain target that we're going for, and the budget is a representation of what we're expecting to see. So the KPIs can be set up so that certain alerts can come into play. So for example, if cash in the bank falls below a certain threshold, an alert can be triggered in that regard. Mm-hmm. So the KPIs are definitely based heavily around what you're expecting to see. They're purely based around what you're expecting to see and how you want to stretch your business, in the next period. So if you're setting your KPIs for a month, for a quarter, then you've got your sales targets around that, then it should be, we're expecting, say 5% growth. Well, let's set the KPIs so that we're looking at 7-8% and then see where it falls. Yeah. So you always want to be giving yourself that little stretch.
One thing that I haven't talked to you about in the past, now I don't think I have, is there's been a tendency in allied health to set KPIs along the lines of billable hours. And that if someone's full-time for 40 hours, that their KPI is 60% of that. And that it's hours that they sell. Where that gets problematic is when an hour is worth a different amount. So you could be selling an hour that's worth $100. You could be selling an hour that's worth 180. And this is a little bit of a huge niggle that the NDIS is potentially going to implement. We're all hanging out waiting to hear about tiered pricing. You might have heard about that. And so an hour when you're providing services to NDIS participants, maybe 200, maybe 180, 160, 140, maybe 120. So all of a sudden this billable hours KPI in my business brain isn't going to work. And that it is a back to the future model of sales targets. Oh, I wish listeners could see Chris's face at this point.
I thought you could.
Well, we can see each other, but they can only hear us. But
oh, that makes it so much better.
Yeah. Okay, so how's that for a thing?
That's very interesting. That is very interesting.
Very interesting.
I would definitely need to come back with, we are going to need a single unit of measurement, or a universal unit of measurement. So the way that we achieve that will be interesting. It's almost, in my mind, it's almost going to be a decimal point. So it'll be 1 point. And what I'm talking about there is there needs to be a way to equalize what those different fees are so that one session is it will become a decimal based on what that fee was. Oh. So you'll need to know how many units you need. So I would say that one as a measurement would be whatever the lowest price point is for your service that's being sold. And then everything and above that would be 1 point and then whatever. Mm-hmm. And so now you've got your single unit of measurement again, you can then work out how many of those units you need to sell. So a session that's 180 might be 1.8, for example. Yep,
correct.
So give it a unit value that way.
Yeah, or you go to sales figures, dollar figures.
Yeah.
Because the practice management software systems can give those reports that, you know, Sarah may have sold, $1,467 worth of therapy and service this week. So it's going to be really interesting, I think. Yeah. I'll keep you updated about what happens. We can have another chat about that one.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was very interesting. I like that.
Yeah, there you go. Curveball. The other thing that bookkeepers know about, and accountants mm-hmm. as well, but bookkeepers perhaps are more frontline on this, is that as a business goes through its growth stages, that there can be some peaks and troughs, hopefully more peaks than troughs. But we sort of know that sometimes when team is built, that there can be a little bit of a divot or a dip in profitability. But then that can all plateau out and it can be on the grow again. And then you might bring in somebody else and somebody else to kind of release the owner from the business. There can be another little dip there. How do you guys see that?
Okay. So the key to this is testing and measuring. And not throwing everything into one bucket and going, how did we do, sort of thing. What I mean by that is understand what the current state of affairs looks like in the business. So before any change takes place, before, you know, we're talking about team members or anything like that, take a snapshot of the business and say, okay, this is what we look like right now. Excellent. And then change one thing. Because what you're effectively doing is you're quarantining the results that are going to come from that, because you haven't added 10 other staff. You haven't put in a new point of sale system or front of house practice management system. You haven't done anything else other than that one thing. Then you can look at the results and monitor the results. And the depending on how much change we're talking about, there will be, you know, even up to a year, depending on what that big change was before you see the results. So really being clear around capturing the information. So if we're putting in a new practice management software platform, then make sure that we are tracking the time involved in training the team. Make sure that we're tracking the time here. But also, as you start to see the benefits from that practice management software, if it's SMS reminders being built in, and then SMS reminders being able to go out to your patients and clients, then how do you measure the increase? So it's really being careful and considered around how we testing and measuring those changes.
Yeah, and I guess I describe it as scenario busting, that before you bring in another clinician or increase admin, is to actually run that scenario through your budget. And it's that moment where it's like you're at the airport, you just see all the numbers trickle and change, and then the number at the bottom right will also change. Not always in a good way, but it will change as well. But you can sort of see what the impact, the so what factor, as I describe it, would be.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so the thing about financials, the thing about money, the thing about bookkeeping is that it's all about habits, as I see it.
Yep.
It's all about somebody doing something at a certain time for the right reasons. It's not unusual for me to hear that allied health business owners may only be looking at, and you may only be looking at their numbers quarterly or every 6 years or maybe even annually, and there's a lot more to it than what you've got in the bank. That's luscious and highly relevant, but there's a lot more to it. How often do you think business owners should be checking their financials?
So once a month checking profit and loss balance sheet along with any other management reports that you pull into the mix. Once a month is generally a great time frame to keep an eye on the trends as they're developing.
And your
bookkeeper... It's kind of like the...
Go for it.
I was just going to say, it's kind of like the Goldilocks notion, as in less than a month is too short. Longer than a month, you're really leaving yourself open to risk.
Yeah. Is there a business that's too small to not have a bookkeeper?
Is there a business that's too small to not have a bookkeeper?
Well, maybe the easiest question.
I would say no to that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you're running a business, then you shouldn't have to be worrying about compliance, ideally. Compliance isn't why you started the business. So I could be a sole trader the books need to be done right, because what happens, the problem is, and this kind of comes back to the question before.
Are we going to be talking about shoeboxes?
No, it's more so about how do you know if it's not done right? We had a client who, we've still got the client, but they had about 5 years worth of outstanding BASs and all sorts of horrendous things, which we have cleaned up for them. And the problem there is that it took 5 years for all of the bad habits that have been slowly sitting there and
festering.
Financial
festering.
I'm not going to say too much about it, but you can imagine what 5 years worth of outstanding BASs, how the ATO would feel about that.
Yeah.
So that is one of the problems, because a lot of the time you don't know that you need the help. Like, you just don't know, because it takes that long for the ATO to come back.
It's a classic situation of you don't know what you don't know. And potentially your time is better served on other value activities.
And
it doesn't have to be business development activities. It's time picking the kids up on time and hanging out and doing nothing and catching up with friends. Having someone come in and get this stuff sorted week after week, fortnight after fortnight, I don't know. I just see it as an absolute game changer in self-worth. And
No, 100%. If I was a sole trader and I felt like, let's say I wasn't even registered for the GST threshold, who am I to say that my business won't grow, won't scale? I mean, if I started the business and I was happy for it to stay a sole trader and I never wanted things to change and I never wanted to increase revenue and all of those things, okay, maybe I could be a small business that didn't need bookkeeping. But generally, people who start a business have vision, have something driving them, and their success is shown in the growth of their business. And so it's much better to get it right from the beginning. It's easier to teach the correct habits and scale with those than it is to correct something 5 years down the track.
Oh, so much easier. Yeah.
So definitely on that question, I would say that every business who is serious should have someone. It doesn't need to be an external bookkeeper. It can be someone internal in their team, but you absolutely want to know that their knowledge on GST is spot on.
Yeah. And for those listening, Chris is waving his arms around at this point. It's really, really important. It's that, who was it? Stephen Covey, start as you mean to proceed.
Yeah.
And purchase in the expertise that you don't yet have. And it's not that you're, abdicating, but you've got somebody in who loves doing that even more than you do. He's probably better at it than you as well, in my case, certainly. So a couple of minutes ago, you mentioned some quite magical words, profit and loss and balance sheet.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about what they are and why they're important.
So why they're important. So a balance sheet is, let's start with the key differences between them. A profit and loss is showing you a period of time. Profit and loss shows you a period of time. A balance sheet is a picture of your business at the current point in time. So whenever the report is run, that is the picture of the business. So understanding that one is based on a time period and the other is as at a certain date, that's the first thing to get your head around. And for me personally, that was the first thing I had to kind of get right in my mind. Okay, so they're measuring in different ways, basically. Yep. So that's the first thing. The second thing with the profit and loss, the best thing, and so assuming that the chart of accounts is perfect and you're happy with how everything is laid out. You've got your cost of goods.
And that would be in MYOB or Xero. That's where you find your chart of accounts. Sitting there waiting for you.
Just sitting there.
All alone.
Just chatting with the other sales accounts, you know, having a good time. So the idea is that any unusual expenses need to be accounted for correctly, because the value of a profit and loss comes from comparing one period against another period against another period against another period and so on. And if you've got unusual expenses that have slipped into one of the account codes, for example, it starts to muddy the waters as far as noticing patterns. So you should be able to look at your profit and loss over a set periods and see trends and see minor changes in positive or negative. So the value of your profit and loss is to keep it neat, keep everything being accounted for as it should be, so that you can then pick up on those trends. Because it's actually quite common. We see a lot of the time where the PAYG payment, for example, might show up somewhere in the other account codes, and it just throws everything off. You know, it makes it very hard to look at it and believe and trust what you're looking at is actual correct.
Yeah. I tend to recommend that business owners physically print it off and go a bit old school and sit with the highlighter and the red pen. And they can sit with Xero open as well, and to actually click through and find out what is actually sitting in $3,500 worth of stationery for August, or what's sitting in insurance that's suddenly way bigger than it usually is, and to actually check that A, stuff is in the right place, but to actually see what makes up those expense totals and the income totals. They're kind of exciting, but a bit more predictable in a way. And that way you're really getting into your numbers and figuring out what belongs where and, identifying with those patterns over months of the year.
And the more that you – that as a habit, if you're doing that once a month and you're actually drilling into those expenses, that is going to prevent any sort of shocks around unexpected liabilities. This is why that monthly review and actually digging in and looking at your profit and loss, doing the same thing every month, profit and loss, balance sheet, what are my management reports coming from my practice management software? And generally we might be talking, say, around clinician performance or whatever you need to see in that space. Doing that on a monthly basis is key to, and drilling into those numbers is absolutely key to protecting yourself from those surprises.
Yep, and the errors. The other thing that I get asked and I hear about a little bit, and it may not be sitting in Xero, it'll be sitting out in, it will be in Xero, you've got to know where to look, is debtors and people who still owe you money.
Okay.
Thoughts, comments, tips, please?
So the as far as debtors go, have a set time in which at which point you would write the debtors off. So what we come across quite often is debtors that are just sitting in someone's either bookkeeping system in their point of sale. It is so common because I think at heart we all believe we're going to get paid for the work.
Some magic
we've done.
Will happen, and
isn't that it's magic? But have a date, and it's not up for your bookkeeper to necessarily advise on this. This is more around what you're comfortable with, but actually have a date whereby you will write off debtors that aren't real anymore. So that's the first thing. The second would be, to chase your debtors up. So, I mean, have a process around that. It may not necessarily be yourself that's doing it, but definitely have a process. And it can be as friendly as one of your team members calling up, touching base, and managing it that way.
Or have you got a number three on your list?
I Or, oh, well, bill in advance.
Yeah. Get ninja on it and figure out how to avoid the debtors in the first place.
Well, yeah, 100%. If you can bill in advance or at least take payment on the spot. But, I mean, most allied health should be okay in that regard. It would really be the health funds that would be slowing that down, I would imagine.
Yeah, and increasingly it's safe and secure to hold customers' credit card details, and they can get tucked away into the practice management software that no one can see them, but they're available for billing at the end of the day or whatever the process is. So, yeah.
And quite often with the practice management, the way they actually retain the credit card details is they'll only, once you've entered it in, it'll only ever show you the last four digits.
Yep.
So
yep.
You're pretty confident. I mean, absolutely go and check your individual practice management software, but you can be pretty confident to delegate a task like that.
Yep. Absolutely. Wow, what a romp through bookkeepers and practice management software and reports and things like that. Is there anything that we haven't covered?
Just one thing which is, I think, very important right now, specifically for allied health, and that is... and this is my opinion, but I, at the moment, don't see the advantage of connecting your practice management software to your cloud accounting.
Oh, yeah. Saving this curly one for the end.
Yes. But basically, the integrations aren't always as sophisticated as we would like them to be. And I've just come back from XeroCon, which is the largest technology conference in Southern Hemisphere. And I was actually talking with a vendor about this specific problem, where the integration brings across every single transaction, where there is actually no additional value in that. All we would need is a summary. And there's just not that much control at the moment around what information comes across. Or not as much control as we would like. So my advice is not to connect the practice management software to your cloud accounting platform, because if you can keep your accounting system clean, pristine, and you actually believe the numbers that are in there, that is so much more valuable than having a haphazard integration sending across sales. We're talking, like, one example I can go through would be 6.5 transactions that came across into Xero and couldn't
thousand.
Be 6,500, and they couldn't be reconciled. It was actually so bad, and because of the timing of where we were in the financial year, right at the beginning, we actually decided in that instance not to clean up the file because it was just that bad. It was actually fortunate when we met with these clients and everything fell into place. If it was any other time of the year, that would have been an absolute nightmare to try to unravel. I would say that you can get the information you need from the practice management sales reports. You can get the breakdowns of clinician performance of the products and services. You can get all of that from reporting in those packages. And so a monthly total or a weekly total, even an end of day, if you wanted, I mean, you probably wouldn't. But weekly, for example, you end of week report straight into your accounting software and you know that it's exactly correct.
Yeah, snap. I'm completely with you on keeping your practice management software apart from Xero. I think it gives financial privacy to the business owner. Mm-hmm. And yep. That not everybody can see everything. I know you can set security levels, but one of the big advantages is having the transactional history for each of your clients in one place and associated with the clinical notes. And that is actually a really monumental business asset that will have a commercial value at some point when you're looking to exit at some point. So, absolutely. I've just seen it go not right enough times for it to be a bit of a no-brainer at the moment.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm yet to see it go exactly right.
Yeah.
The integrations at the moment, they seem to be a little bit more of a marketing tool than much else. That's my personal opinion. And it's as I said, it's based on the fact that you can't configure them to the degree that you should be able to.
Yeah, absolutely. All righty. So given that you had the very first word, I'm going to let you have the very last word. Yep. What other pearls of wisdom have you got for people listening about how to love their bookkeeper even more?
All right, I tell you what, here's one. As soon as you receive an expense document, so you've got a tax invoice, it might have come in via email, you might have received it. We could be even just talking about a fuel receipt for your car. As soon as you receive it, and I'm talking before you've paid it, as soon as you receive it, send it to your bookkeeper. They need it to be in this in your bookkeeping system. The reason that's a pearl of wisdom is it just means that your reports will be much more up to date if you were to run them or when you run them. The habit that a lot of our GPs get into is that we provide this awesome cloud-based system that does all of these things, and yet they're still managing their payables with a folder on the desk or a tray or so. And we get it. We understand how that works. Basically, it goes in the tray. When it's paid, it leaves the tray. And then that's how I know, that's how I'm managing my business, right? So it makes sense. But it means that until you've paid, if you take a month or whatever your terms are with that supplier, it means that your numbers will be out until that bill goes in. So it's much better to have it entered into your system the moment you've received it. And then you'll be able to, rather than using a folder, a physical folder to manage those payables, you'll actually be able to run a payables report straight away. It'll have due dates for all of your bills, and you'll just be able to do it in that way. And if you're using, depending on the type of accounting software you're using, there's a very good chance that when you click onto those bills, if you want to get more detail, an actual copy of the invoice will be attached to it as well. So that's my pearl of wisdom. Is give the information to your bookkeeper as soon as you receive it. They'll appreciate it so much.
Photo or emailing it through or some magical app?
It depends on, I guess, the system that you've got with your bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. So it could be through an app. It could be through an email. It could be you're dropping off a folder with the actual item in it. The value is in getting that document to your bookkeeper so they can enter it into your system in a shorter time period. It just means that your figures will be more accurate more of the time.
Got it. Love it. Alrighty. Raving fan. You know that. Raving fan. Chris Stenhouse, thank you for joining us. In the show notes, we'll provide details for Professional Bookkeeping Services, PBS. As you're commonly known, and links and all the rest of it. So, thank you.
No worries. Happy to do it. I look forward to the next one.
All righty. Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues. The Private Practice Made Perfect podcast is brought to you by Experts on Air Podcast Network.